George, you got to protect yourself this weekend as a Packer fan. You're going to want to, there's going to be a lot of Husker fans that are going to be rooting for Sue and David.
Oh, boy.
Shaq Barrett to get to the Super Bowl. So be strong.
Gotcha.
Okay?
Yeah.
You got to be strong. And there'll be people that are be like, no, man, go Bucks. I've been a Bucks fan for as long as Devin White's been in the NFL.
Yikes.
And maybe some people didn't even know who Devin White was up until yesterday. They should. He's had a nice start to his career. All right, 11:40 on the Gary Sharp Show. Let's welcome in Mike Schaefer, who joins us now. Did you enjoy the weekend of football?
I did. It was good. It's one of those things where the game that I was most excited for was probably the biggest dud, I guess, out of the four of them in Buffalo and Baltimore. I mean, not opposed to defensive football, but it just, missed field goals, just kind of ugly, questionable offense at times. Finishes up 17-3. You had the really exciting pick six. That was like the one play that sort of came out of that game. But other than that, the other three contests were pretty good. I mean, Rams and Packers kind of pulled away at the end there, but that was an interesting game. There was a moment there where it felt like the Rams were going to get themselves back into it. Jared Goff played better than I thought he would, but ultimately the Packers just had too much. And Aaron Donald wasn't Superman this weekend. He needed to be, and I imagine he's pretty banged up. It was weird seeing him being so emotional on the sidelines. I mean, I wasn't expecting to see that. I figured I'd be the emotional one, given that I, in early December, put quite a bit of Monopoly money on the Rams to win the NFC. But, then things played out the way they did. Now we get Bucks-Packers, which I think should be a pretty good rematch. And then, of course, Chiefs-Bills, I think, is going to be fantastic.
I think with Aaron Donald, and I think Aaron Donald's the best player in the NFL, and he clearly was not 100%. And maybe even if he was 100%, Green Bay's offensive line played exceptional, and Aaron Rodgers was comfortable, and he was picking apart the Rams. Lazard and Adams and Jones, I mean, they just, I was really impressed by Green Bay. I think they're the team that I've already put into the Super Bowl of the four that are playing. But you're right about the emotion of Aaron Donald, and I think we've heard this kind of on our level of college guys that have gone through this kind of a season with everything that's being asked of them, just to be able to play the game, that it comes to an end and it's so emotional. And you can tell that the game means everything to Aaron Donald. And for him not to be 100%, that he can't do what he normally does, I think the emotion at the end of the game hit him. And heck, it hit me to see a guy like Aaron Donald in tears on the sidelines.
Yeah, same. I mean, I think you kind of hit on it. Like, it was a weird year and people gave up a lot and they went through a lot. They did a lot. I think he was probably really frustrated that he couldn't play the same way because of his injury. And I think, that penalty he got was a pretty crucial one early in the first half. And so I think that there was just a lot of frustration and it just didn't go the way that he probably would have hoped. But I think you're right. I mean, I would put Aaron Donald up there. If he's not number one, I don't know where I would go with it. Maybe Patrick Mahomes when healthy. It's really hard to say anyone else. But some of that, and I don't mean to take away from him, some of that is the product of just having a really, really, really good head coach that has a great offensive mind. And, he put Chad Henne in a hell of a spot. Which, first of all, before we get to the 4th-and-1 and the cojones of Andy Reid, Chad Henne scramble. Yep. How does that rank in terms of, like, playoff amazing moments? Like, just, everyone that's watching sort of feels the same situation. And there's no guarantee the Browns are going to win if they get the ball back. But people sort of felt like momentum was all on their side. And this guy, like a journeyman backup quarterback, basically with a career-long rush of, I don't even know what it was, but hadn't had a run that long. And I think his last 7 years or something in that neighborhood, or last, 7 years in which he played, and then to have that rush to set him up even to get to the 4th-and-short, and then of course the great play call there from Andy Reid.
And on that 3rd down, I don't think Henne has ever run that fast. I mean, they clocked him at about 18 miles an hour, how fast he was running. I mean, great spot by the officials. At first, I thought it was a first down, but great spot by the officials, and of course, it led to the fourth and one. And when that game ends, I'm sitting there going, man, what did we just witness this league? And it was a fantastic weekend of a football. Let me ask you one quick thing on the NFL, and then we'll shift to Nebraska football. What's the current narrative on Lamar Jackson?
Well, I think it's unfair to start with, but I think the narrative that is he basically he can't play quarterback, which is laughable to me when you look at his touchdown to interception ratio and what he's done in 3 years. And then there's also the narrative that he can't win the big game, which is laughable to me because we'll get into this conversation if you want to have it. Like, I think those are the two big things. But how is Lamar Jackson at 23 years old and he's 1-3 in the playoffs, which sounds bad, but he's also put a team in the playoffs 3 straight years.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we having this conversation with him when Drew Brees exits every year? Every year. The Saints won 50-plus games between 2017 and 2020.
Not going to argue with you.
Drew Brees never got to the Super Bowl in that time. Aaron Rodgers has been to one Super Bowl in his career, and we widely regard him as the best quarterback playing at times during that stretch. He went to one Super Bowl. Why is Lamar Jackson at 23 years old with his best wide receiver sometimes, Willie Snead, taking as much trash as he does from people? Like, I think, you know, it doesn't help when Patrick Mahomes goes and wins the Super Bowl last year because it reassesses the standard of greatness that is unfairly applied. But it's like if Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers and these other quarterbacks, and they're not alone, and I don't want to take anything away from them, but it's just like, I don't understand why we have to have this Lamar discussion all the time. Like, it's just like people just can't wait to tell you that they were ultimately right and he's not very good, even though no statistic backs that up. If you want to use the terrible stat of quarterback wins, that doesn't back it up. If you want to use touchdown interception ratio, that doesn't back it up. You know who has a better completion percentage, Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson? It's Lamar Jackson. Like, I don't understand why people are in such a hurry to tell you that Lamar Jackson isn't very good, despite all of the evidence that says otherwise.
I think,
you know what's really hard? Winning football games in the NFL.
Yeah, it is.
Winning football games, period. But winning football games in the NFL in the playoffs, really tough to do.
Yeah. Last year was the year to knock Lamar Jackson. This year, he won a playoff game on the road as an underdog and then got beat by a team that if they were in the Super Bowl and they were getting ready to go to the Super Bowl a week from today, we'd go, yeah, that's a really good Bills team. I think the narrative against Lamar Jackson is because the NFL promotes him. He's on the front of their video game, and he has not had the playoff success, like you mentioned, in Patrick Mahomes. So he is unfairly compared to Patrick Mahomes. I mean, Lamar Jackson is good. The next step will be in the playoffs. I think he could look across the sidelines and see how a number one wide receiver changes everything. He used to be your guy in Diggs. He goes to Baltimore.
Still my guy.
And he adds to what the development of Josh Allen. And then you get Brian Daboll as an offensive coordinator. And look at what you have in a Buffalo offense. Josh Allen is all of a sudden, the narrative has changed on him. But Diggs being a true number one wide receiver changes things. I think that's what Baltimore needs. They need a true number one wide receiver. Not four guys that get to share that spot. They need a number one wide receiver that is NFL worthy, and I think that would be a great help to Lamar Jackson.
Well, I think if you look at the four teams that are in the playoffs still, you're talking Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Stephon Diggs, and then the Bucs have a wealth of very good wide receivers. Whether you want to say it's Godwin, Evans, Gronk. I mean, to crash that party, you got to have the forward pass, and you have to have good receiver play. And one of the things that Buffalo was doing on Saturday night, it felt like when they were in a tight spot, it's just like, all right, we're going to draw up these in-breaking routes where Stephon Diggs, who's an incredible route runner, is at least going to get a step. And if Josh Allen puts the ball near him, he's going to come up. Like, he's not afraid to go over the middle. He's tough. I mean, he's not a big guy.
Mm-mm.
But he's tough. He plays tough. He plays like a possession receiver sometimes for the Bills, which is incredible because he's also as dangerous of a big play threat as you have. And so he really has helped Josh Allen a lot. But I get kind of tired because we want so much to judge these guys, and it's like their careers have just started. Like, why? Like, Aaron Rodgers didn't play for 4 years, and then he got a lot of time to sort of build up and then immediately had that success. And we all recognized, like, he's fantastic. He's really, really good. It just, like, if it doesn't happen in the first 4 years, people are willing to give up on a quarterback right away. It's just sort of incredible to me, given how hard it is to win in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Mike Schaefer joining us here on the Gary Sharp Show. The optics of last week from afar, if you're looking at Nebraska football on the transaction wire, were what?
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at it in this sense, the Wandale Robinson departure seems to overshadow the rest of it, especially from an offensive standpoint. It's hard because as excited as you could be about that defense returning or Samari Toure or Marquis Stepp, I mean, losing your best offensive player on an offense that's already worse than it was each of the last two seasons is tough to stomach. And then to lose them to Kentucky, an offense that isn't that much better than yours, and the interview that he had with Adam Rittenberg, which probably didn't win any favors for Scott Frost and company over in the stadium. Like, it's tough. And look, people want to be excited about Samari Toure and what he did at the FCS, and they want to be excited about Marquis Stepp and his 6 yards of carry in his first full year. But I just think that Scott Frost has lost the benefit of the doubt at this point with this offense. And I think there's a lot more sort of enthusiasm about, well, maybe if the defense can hold teams around 20 points, then that'll be enough. And it's like, we're already here in year four. That's not a great sign. I mean, it's mm-hmm. unfortunate because if Wandale's still on that team, you're talking about one of the best weeks in this staff that they've had since they've been here. Because everything else broke right for them. It's just their most important offensive player left. And so it's hard to overcome that.
You want to take a stab at the first three guys to line up at wide receiver to kick off the 21 season?
Well, Toure didn't come here to be on the bench. And I know there's a lot of like hand-wringing about the walk-ons and other people. So let's say Toure for sure. I'm going to say Xavier Betts.
Okay.
And so then a third wide receiver. I want to say Alante Brown, but I can't get there yet. I know that they're going to like William Nixon when he's healthy, but I can't get there yet either. I might go with Oliver Martin for this exercise at the moment, though I recognize that it's more likely to be an interior wide receiver. Actually, can I change this? I'm going to go Thomas Fedoni.
Mm.
What if Nebraska basically uses Thomas Fedoni as a slot wide receiver in his first year? Because that's effectively how he's going to be used as a tight end.
Boom, you're reading my show sheet because that's what's going to lead me to this. We watched enough of Kyle Pitts at Florida this week. We've seen enough of Thomas Fedoni, and he's here. He's going to be able to go through spring ball. I think it's go time from the time he walks on campus. The NFL is calling, and between now and when he leaves, I do believe, outside of an injury, that he will have a extremely productive career here. That position, which I watch a guy wearing 87 every Sunday in the NFL. We've seen the evolution of tight ends in the college and professional game. Is Fedoni a guy that could be like a Kyle Pitts at Florida that is listed as a tight end, but actually they're kind of a hybrid. They can do both. And then the other part of this, haven't I heard that Fedoni will get an opportunity to work with both wide receivers and tight ends this spring?
I hadn't heard that second part, but it wouldn't surprise me. I think it's interesting because when the staff first got here, guys like McGriff and Katerian Legrone would talk about the Y receiver position. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Which is effectively just a split-out tight end. I mean, I think that's basically how Thomas Fedoni is viewed, and I kind of think he's the first real version that Nebraska has maybe pulled in with sort of his mini-me. And the kid from Norris, James Carney, as another potential version of that. So I think you're definitely on to something. I mean, I don't look for him to be a classic tight end by any means. Though I do think they want to build him up that he can help out in line when necessary. But I do think you're certainly on to something. He's going to be used a lot. He's going to be used immediately. And if he is going to spend some time at wide receiver, I think all the better for a Nebraska offense that really needs to try everything. I mean, everything this offseason sort of has to feel like a kitchen sink until they can figure out what it is they are, what they want to do, and how they want to do it.
I mean, think about the possibilities at that position. You not only have this freshman walking in the door that was the best at his position in high school, and I mean, physically, he looks like, you know, 8 months he's ready to go. Is you've got in the emergence of Austin Allen, who was one of the favorite targets of the quarterback position. You still got Vokolek, who I think still has a good chance to be a solid tight end. I mean, can you get Fedoni and Allen on the field at the same time? You know, two guys that they're not making their bread by blocking. They make their bread by catching the football. But those two guys and their height would be a nice little weapon to have if you are also talking about additional wide receivers on the field that started about 6 foot three.
Yeah, well, and then think about it this, and I don't want to get people too stirred up here because we haven't seen this much, but if Nebraska can go tempo with that kind of personnel, what are you supposed to do if you're outside linebackers?
Yeah,
I mean, some of them aren't, in the Big Ten, some of them aren't going to be as fast as Thomas Fedoni or even Austin Allen to a degree, and they're certainly not going to be as tall. And so you put a lot of stress on coverage in the middle of the field, but that's where, and this is where people listening are going to be completely locked in, that's where your quarterback has to be really good. He has to be able to hit those seam routes. The difference between Kyle Trask and Adrian Martinez in terms of throwing in that area of the field is, you know, the difference between the Indian Ocean and, I don't know, Lake North outside of Columbus. So it's pretty large. I mean, Adrian would have to really make some strides in his game for Nebraska to properly attack the sort of elements of the field that kind of two tight end and a sped up tight end attack. And when you're playing somebody split out in the slot, really provides you, because you're talking post routes, you're talking corners, you're talking those seams. Those teams are just deadly. I mean, the talking with Jay Foreman about this maybe a couple weeks ago, we were talking tight end play and how much has changed in the NFL. And those seam routes are almost impossible for anybody to cover, because if you're in zone and you have a quarterback that's pretty good at dropping it in there, your safety can't get too deep, or your linebacker has to get pretty deep, and then you're throwing underneath to the running backs who can all catch out of the backfield. Like, it opens up a lot of the offense if you have the ability to hit that middle of the field. And so that's where, you know, if you're looking for what you want Adrian Martinez to improve on the most, for me it would be the ability to hit those throws.
Do you expect coaching movement this week? I mean, Jeremy Pruitt is out of Tennessee. There's still coaches that are filling vacancies on their staffs. Nebraska has a vacancy right now. It's an off-the-field role. Do you expect any coaching movement this week? And then what's your thoughts on maybe the plan for Nebraska on what they do with special teams moving forward?
Yeah, so I'll start with the special teams. I guess I sort of explained it this way on the message board. I'm still of the mindset that they're more likely going to have an off-the-field analyst type person that sort of heads up those things, with maybe trying to mash it up with an on-the-field coach who sort of nominally oversees the unit. At the same time, if there is coaching change, then that sort of allows them to reconfigure their staff. But I really don't know. I've heard it hinted enough times that there's going to be some sort of difference with this staff in terms of the 10 assistant coaches, but I don't have any information as to where that's going to go. And I've heard plenty of other things hinted in the last 10 days or so. So I think that we're headed for another sort of tumultuous week of Nebraska news, and the makeup of this roster, both players and coaches, to be different by Friday than it is right now.
Hey, I'm throwing you a little bit of a curve here, and I apologize, but maybe you've already looked into this. How many schools around the country where the special teams role is an off-the-field role? Is Nebraska unique?
I think it's pretty common, to be honest. Like, I think a lot of people have shifted towards that analyst role. I don't have the data to back it up, but it does seem like, because I always felt like when we looked it up with Bruce Reed, it was weird to have a guy that was only a special teams coordinator. The hard part is determining when you have, like, sort of the Javon DeWitt, where it's like the guy has two different roles, and you kind of have to determine, like, is he actually doing a lot of the special teams, or is a graduate assistant or a quality control coach or an analyst sort of doing that, and then he's the on-field presence of it. So there's so many different ways that teams go about this. And I don't think there's any one correct way. You just have to figure out how you want to assemble your staff. Because I think there's real value. You get a good special teams coordinator. That guy usually is a pretty valuable assistant on a staff. I mean, we talked about Sean Snyder last year and ending up at USC. I mean, you're seeing now guys like Dan Campbell in the NFL is going to be a head coach at the Lions. I mean, he's a special teams coordinator. John Harbaugh was a special teams coordinator. I mean, there's real value in that position. I don't think people should poo-poo it just because they saw what happened with Mike Riley and with Bruce Reed.
450. Schaaf, as always, I appreciate it. Good start to the week. We'll see if it'll continue to be busy. But always always look forward to our chats. Thank you.
Enjoy. I look forward to next week. We're discussing who's in the Super Bowl. I think it's going to be a good game regardless of what matchup we get. I'm excited.
Absolutely, Will. Schaaf, thanks.
Yeah.
And so Mike Schaefer from Husker 24/7. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike J. Schaefer. Probably also will be another busy week in the college basketball world for postponements due to COVID. You know, Nebraska men's basketball is on pause. Their next game is not slated to be played until January 30th against Penn State. I think that would be up in the air because of players available. Omaha men's basketball is supposed to come off of being paused today. They don't play this upcoming weekend because of this, the schedule had them as a bye week. Xavier UConn has been postponed for Wednesday. Now Michigan State has postponed another game. They will not play in Champaign on Saturday against the Fighting Illini. All right, two more hours to go. In the next hour, Mark Manning will join us, Nebraska wrestling coach. Plus, we'll chat some more about the four in the NFL yesterday. Now down to two games to go. And a little bit more on when a quarterback is playing his final game, it never seems to go the way we want it to go. Definitely for Drew Brees yesterday. But which way do the Saints, do the Steelers, teams that have questions about their older quarterbacks that they've got to move into retirement? What happens next? All of that in the last 2 hours of a Monday edition of the Gary Sharp Show on 1620 The Zone.